Welcome everyone to the Carolina Outdoors. We hope that we get to talk about outdoor things that you will maybe do, whether it be this weekend or the near future. We are now in June, which is one of the best outdoor times for people to get outside, namely because school in normal times is out. Families begin doing vacations. Of course, this year, entirely different format. A lot of us have been at home more often than not, and we've been doing family things because of that. Anyway, we still want to talk about it in June because the weather has finally turned into spring and you can get out into our Carolina outdoors and enjoy it. I'm Bill Barty, standing alongside Wes Lawson here. We're the outdoor guys from Jesse Brown's. Say hello, Wes.
Hey, hello, Wes. Bill, how are we doing today?
Doing wonderful. Wes, I'm looking forward to talking to you a little bit. Whether you're a bass fisherman, whether you're heading to the coast, or whether you're in the mountains, we have had record rainfall in the past few weeks. The month of May was amazing. June started off pretty rainy as well. What does that mean for area anglers? If you're heading out to Lake Wylie, Lake Norman, there's a lot of debris, and the water was up. If you were heading for the mountains, of course, that cubic feet of water that was rolling through there was unbelievable. So if you're heading that way, you'll have all kinds of new water to fish. The good news is that water gets down fairly quickly as it moves all the way out to the coast. But we weren't going to talk about that because we talked about that last week, how to cross those streams, how to be safe on a hike or angling. This time we're going to delve a little bit deeper into the hatch schedule. We talked about it previously that the season has been later than normal, but if we're heading out for a June fishing trip, the good news, the trout streams are healthy. The bad news is this Saturday is the last day for the delayed harvest waters to be delayed. That means you can keep those fish, but besides all of that, Wes, we want to be sure to tie on the right flies. Can you give us angling advice for heading for the mountains and what insects may be flying around?
Yeah, and you know, all of that rain now is paying off for us as we're kind of drying up a little bit. You will notice in those shafts of light in places, you'll start to see as the day goes on, those tornadoes of different bugs that are coming out. And it's going to vary in some cases tremendously within a few hundred feet or a few hundred yards. But there are a few sort of good rules to live by. Now that we ease into June, one of your go-to flies, and it's been this way since fly fishing really took off, is going to be a good old-fashioned Adams. Those are going to be an all-day, everyday kind of thing to have. You might also want to think about later in the day some things like light Cahills. Those have a really nice, very distinct color to them. If you're curious, you can either take a look on the website or stop by the store. We'll show them to you. I would also be thinking about some of those stoneflies. Those stoneflies have spent a lot of time growing to get to where they are now as nymphs or getting up there in that topwater. So things like stimulators, which we oftentimes use in here as a strike indicator. A stimulator is actually one of two different variants of a stonefly. It's either one that has been attacked by a fish or a bird and is now floating deceased on the water, or it's a female skirting across laying eggs. I didn't know that until recently. I just thought it was one more version. Yellow sallies are still going to be really big. If we kind of take a quick turn over to the caddisflies, at various times throughout the year, fly fishermen and women get really excited about the caddis hatch, especially in the mountains or especially in the Mountain West out in the Rockies. You're going to start to see caddis. So what would that be? The things like elk hair caddis would be really great. Green rockworms, green humpies, things like that are going to be really, really good. Now, fishermen have for years always relied on things like worms, and fly fishing is the same way. So inchworms, squirmy wormies, San Juan worms would be really good. And I'd be thinking a lot about having a bead head on that. A bead head is just a weight, and it's going to help get that fly or that worm under the water, into the water column, and it actually moves much more realistically. It has more life to it. So those would be good. Crickets are always good. We're still kind of early for grasshoppers. We've got some time there. So for right now, Adams, L. caracatus, stimulators, those stoneflies and things. But the caddis hatch is beginning to happen. It's happening now, especially as we warm up and dry out.
I want to come back to that because it kind of follows up with the rainfall that we've had. And as you were naming, whether it be the squirmy wormies or I guess terrestrials is what they're called. They're not insects. They are bugs or creatures of the land. Ants, beetles, grasshoppers, crickets, inchworms, San Juan worms, squirmy worms, all of those notably live on the land, not in the water or water column. But when it rains a lot, guess what? They get knocked out of the trees. They get washed from the land into the creeks, into the rivers, into the lakes, and that's what those fish eat. So when you've had rain like we have, and as the weather warms up, those terrestrial patterns will come into play even more so. So keep those close to the fly box if you're heading anywhere in the Carolinas for a little fishing time.
You know, one that we didn't mention is a midge. And a midge essentially is just any non-biting or non-stinging fly. Think of a no-see-um or a gnat. If you're near the stream or the pond or the any of the water and it's real buggy out, it's time to go fishing and try to mimic what you're seeing. So even if, you know, conventional wisdom says you should be fishing XYZ pattern, if you're seeing something else on the water or over top of the water, it's time to make a change to catch those fish.
All right, I got to bring this up too because it is worth noting, and I got to see it this past week with my own very eyes, but as the weather warms up, as we are in June, but the water levels and the water temperatures are all healthy because of that rainfall that we've had in prior weeks. It's a great time to go dry fly fishing. And the flies that you mentioned are dry flies. Adams and light Cahills are a part of that mayfly family that matures and comes out on top. I went fishing with the curator of the Fly Fishing Museum in Bryson City, Alan Baker. And this time of year, Alan is a dry fly fisherman. I mean, he'll break code if he needs to and nymph fish, which was what I was doing because of the high water. But he is a dry fly fisherman, which is, for many, the purest form of fly fishing. But because of the warm weather, the flies, the activity was good. He's a good angler anyway, but catching them on top. So he was catching those trout on the flies that you're really talking about. And it was something to see. Of course, he's tying his own flies. I buy mine at Jesse Brown's. So it's a great time to get out there. Why dry fly fishing? Mainly because you can move faster, but you can see the action, the activity. You can see your fly line deliver to the water, that fly land gently, just like it does in nature, and then you can see the trout strike, the fish strike. It take that dry fly you just delivered, and then the fish fight begins. So I stayed with the nymphs fishing deeper, but I got to watch Alan do his dry fly fishing now that we're in the warmer weather months. If you're just joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors, I'm Bill Bartee with Wes Lawson, and we're talking a little bit about getting outdoors, the hatch schedule that's going on in our area of the Carolinas right now, fish in the southeast and that sort of thing. Wes, I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about getting outdoors for a hike. Can you give us some must-haves if we're just going to head out for a day hike, if we're going to go, let's see, we talked beforehand, the trailheads of the Appalachian Trail are open. We know the state parks in both Carolinas are open. The greenways in all of our municipalities are open for hiking. We're still working on Pisgah National Forest in the Ranger District and some of the other districts there. But I know footwear is an important part. Comfortable yet supportive footwear for a good day hike. Got any other little tidbits of advice?
Yep. So comfortable supportive footwear, which is a whole radio show there. Good socks, not the cotton tube socks you've been wearing forever with holes in them. We'll skip that. I'm going to tell you that I highly recommend for anybody good trekking poles, because it takes the load off your feet, your knees, and your low back, and makes you about 30% more efficient. I also think that a lightweight day pack, even if it's just for a short couple miles, as it starts to warm up and that humidity really jumps, you are going to need to stay hydrated. So I'm going to want to have either my water bladder in there or a couple of bottles of water. Yeah, maybe a Nalgene or two. I'm going to skip the insulated water bottles because they're just so heavy. If I've got to carry that, I don't want to be that loaded down. And odds are I might be carrying for somebody else. I'm going to have good breathable clothes. We talk a lot in here about sun shirts. Sun shirts are lightweight. They wick moisture and they block 40 to 50. They have a sun protection of 40 or 50. So it's not going to, you know, come off with your sweat. They're also oftentimes antimicrobial, so they don't hold odor like cotton and other synthetics, and that's a nice thing for the people on the ride home. But then I'm going to be thinking about things like a good pair of polarized sunglasses to cut down on a glare and to protect my eyes from the sun's harmful UV rays. But I am going to spend just a minute on those sun shirts. Historically, those have been kind of the domain of anglers and landscaping professionals, people who are in the sun a lot. But really, anytime you're out there, especially now through the late fall, you're putting your skin at risk, and your skin is the biggest organ in your body. So whatever we can do to prevent future urgent dermatological experiments, we want to do that. And these things don't wash off. You don't have to keep reapplying. They're comfortable. Even the long sleeve, I can cut the grass or go for a long hike and be more comfortable in that than in an old school cotton t-shirt. You'll be better off. You won't be dragging as much. But for me, those trekking poles are going to be a big part of that, because if you have any kind of foot, knee, or low back concerns, this keeps you in the game, keeps you safe. You don't want to do anything that's going to help create problems. We want to stop problems, because other people are with you. You don't want to bring their experience down. You also don't want to get hurt, because that's a bad thing. And if you're hiking somewhere, you're a long way from getting better quickly. So mindfulness there is really important. We have a lot of these great products here in the store, either the trekking poles, the right footwear. And Bill, I think you could talk just a minute about how we go about the footwear and the fit for you and where you're going.
I do have to say, and I don't want to just be, I'm going to say this as a reiteration, just so people listening to the Carolina Outdoors, whether it's early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT Radio, or maybe you're just joining us where you subscribe to the podcast, Carolina Outdoors, trekking poles are huge. And yes, we are talking day hikes here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're talking lightweight on your back. You're not going for multiple days, just for the day. It is amazing how spoiled you will be once you use trekking poles to help propel you up or down the trail, God, even if it's in your own neighborhood on the sidewalk. The energy that those trekking poles help, and we're talking about not walking sticks. What Wes was talking about is a pole in each hand. And I use them because now I'm addicted, and people will see me coming on a day hike and go, look, here comes a professional. But once you've used them, it's hard not to use them. So I will reiterate that. And speaking of uphill and downhill, to what you were talking about, proper footwear and the proper fitting of footwear, I love talking about this. In fact, if you stop by Jesse Brown's, I will probably nerd out with you in regards to a shoe fitting or a boot fitting and how important it is. So namely, number one, your footwear needs to be comfortable. That's how easy that is. They just need to be comfortable. But alongside with that comfort, they need to fit you and support you. That's a code word there, support, because even if it's a low top shoe, like a tennis shoe even, what we sell at Jesse Brown's are more substantial than tennis shoes, but they look like that. They're sporty and low top, but they still provide a lot of support. The only thing that the ones we sell at Jesse Brown's give up when you get a low top is the amount of protection from, it's self-explanatory, but if you don't have your ankles covered and you hit a root or a rock, it may bump your ankle. But for the most part, your body is supported by your feet from the bottom up. So good, supportive, comfortable footwear. Comfortable is a little bit coated up a little bit because they are substantial in that they are a little bit more rigid. And that's where the fitting comes into play, is to note the rigidity of the boot or shoe and the lack of rigidity with your feet. So we have a little bit of allowance for heel lift when you have your shoe on. If it lifts less than a quarter of an inch, usually that's okay. Most importantly, is that proper, improper?
Sure,
probably.
We'll say it works.
is to have toe room. Why? Because 0.2 of a mile down an incline, even a light incline, with shoes that your toes are touching or punching the front, make for discomfort beyond your hike. And that is where shoes are improperly fitted. We always try to make sure at Jesse Brown's that you have that toe room so that you can not only go up a hill, as slight as it may be, but you can also come down that hill and be comfortable and know that your toenails are going to still be with you and they're still going to be the same color that you painted them before the hike. Except for the guys who don't paint their toenails.
Right, except for them.
we want them. So for any questions on the equipment you need for a day hike, as simple as it may seem, it's still very important to us at Jesse Brown's that you're outfitted correctly, that your shoes fit correctly, and that you can enjoy the beauties that we have here in the Carolinas whenever you're outdoors.
And you know, Bill, people oftentimes kind of laugh at us when we go through the shoes and then we talk about socks, because most of us take socks for granted. So you've just spent some good change on a great pair of shoes or boots. If you're just going to go around in the same beat up socks, you're going to have a less than stellar of experience. The right sock provides a little bit more cushion, a little bit more support, but it keeps your foot dry, which is really important, or drier, and it's going to be a better overall combination. You're not going to go out and get a sports car and put truck tires on it. At least I don't think you're going to. If you do, let's talk later. But you want to have the right balance there so that when you are on the trail, you are having the best experience and the best performance possible. They go hand in hand and foot in boot.
Foot in boot, last but not least. Wes, we're both wearing these, and they're great for hiking. Of course, these days during a pandemic, neck gaiters or buffs that go around your neck. They can also be a hat. They can also be a sweatband around your head. Any use like that, but you can also cover your nose and mouth if you're going to be around other people or other people are going to be around you, whichever your persuasion is. Neck gaiters are great. We'll talk about it from a hiking standpoint. They are sun protective. They do help manage the sweat. They keep the sweat out of your eyes. They're a good accessory too, I must say, as you and I are both wearing them on the radio.
Absolutely.
Or podcast. He's Wes Lawson. I'm Bill Bartiz.